Hello, and thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Renoites. My name's Connor McQuivy. I'm your host, as always. Renoites is the weekly interview podcast where I talk to all sorts of folks from here in Northern Nevada who are doing interesting and important work in the area. Today on the podcast, I'm excited to welcome CEO of the Community Health Alliance and former city council member, Oscar Delgado. We had a good conversation about public health. Community Health Alliance serves a large portion of our lower income population. They're a federally qualified health center, which we talk about what that means on this episode. And it was really fantastic to get to sit down with the former councilman and talk a little bit about his work on city council as well. Most of that conversation is in the bonus segment of this episode. As I've talked about on the show, if you want to support the show financially, you can do so on Patreon. That's patreon.com/renoites. And I'm including this season bonus segments for the folks on Patreon. On this week's bonus segment, we talked a little bit about his time on city council, some of the toxicity that has gotten into our politics, both nationally and locally. We talked about the redistricting, the appointment versus special election process for replacing his seat when he resigned from the council. A bunch of really good stuff on that bonus segment available just for patrons, but there's a little sneak peek of it at the end of this episode. If you have suggestions for guests, ideas for episodes, feedback on this episode or any other, please feel free to reach out. Shoot me an email. My email address is Connor, C-O-N-O-R, at renoites.com. And follow me on Instagram. You can shoot me a message there as well. I am at Renoites on Instagram and on Facebook, though I use Instagram a little bit more often than Facebook. And be sure to tell your friends about the show. If you enjoy this episode, spread the word, help people know about the show. This episode was recorded at the National Automobile Museum. I've been fortunate enough to record a few of our episodes this season at the National Automobile Museum. They've got a cool little podcast studio space. They're doing a ton of events over there, too. If you haven't been to the Automobile Museum in a while, definitely check it out just for the museum itself. It's a really cool space. And they're doing a series of events. They have a nice theater there, and they're having a speaker series, a lot of stuff going on. So be sure to check out what's going on with the National Automobile Museum as well. You can find all the details on the Auto Museum's website at automuseum.org. And now, this week's guest on the podcast, former city council member and CEO of the Community Health Alliance, Oscar Delgado. Oscar Delgado, CEO of the Community Health Alliance, former city councilman for the city of Reno. Welcome to Renoites.
Thanks for having me, Connor. It's a pleasure. Honor.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. I am looking forward to talking about Community Health Alliance because I know you mostly as a city councilman. You were on city council for 10 years, is that right?
Yeah.
But Community Health Alliance is what you are doing now, and it's a huge part of your life. Can you tell me a little bit, just what is Community Health Alliance? I know it is healthcare. I know that it provides a lot of services for people who are lower income. Can you just explain what type of health center that is?
Absolutely. So I've been at Community Health Alliance now coming up on 7 years, actually, this year. And so one of the things that's special about Community Health Alliance is we're an FQHC, which stands for Federally Qualified Health Center. And these federally qualified health centers, some people just call them FQs, are all over the nation. And they were really born back in the 60s as a part of the war against poverty. And it was really an opportunity where the feds wanted to work with communities and get access into those communities that needed them the most. And so through that venture, HOC was born in the late 90s. mid-90s here in Washoe County, known as, what is it, Health Access Washoe County. And that was on Wells, and everyone knows HOC on Wells for being basically your last resort back in the days. In 2012, when St. Mary's sold and went private, many of those individuals that are really part of St. Mary's at that time did not want some of those community assets, those community clinics, some of those mobile units to go to the wayside because that just wasn't the model for the new private owner of Saints. So they got together with the board of community health with HOC, and Community Health Alliance was born in 2012. And really through that, there's been several different variations and visions and leadership at CHA. And then I took over in October of 2019. I was already there as a chief strategy officer, and prior to that, director of community relations. And just kind of seen it through. But the passion for me in terms of what we do is we really get into the communities that I would say are probably our strongest, hardest working communities that need us the most, right? That at times fall between the cracks, that at times they don't necessarily have the so-called insurance to cover all the needs that they necessarily need. And at Community Health Alliance, we provide that preventative wraparound service to make sure that our community stays healthy.
Yeah. So you mentioned that it was originally part of St. Mary's and that's private, you know, now. And how does the experience differ for someone who's going to a FQ from one of these community programs versus, you know, what we see as for-profit healthcare? Because CHA is nonprofit, right?
Correct.
So can you talk a little bit about the difference from the patient perspective of the CHA model versus what we traditionally think of?
One of the coolest things that I love about FQs is my board, my bosses, so to say, right? It's required by law that my board, over 50% of them have to be patients.
Mm.
And so I hear directly from my board members who are patients of ours that use our services, that call me if they're having an amazing experience or if they're not having such an amazing experience, right? And so how do we fix that? How do we make sure that we always consistently have that patient lens on to make sure we provide that quality, that thoughtfulness, that the respectful service? And so what you'll find at our facilities is a sympathetic, thoughtful staff that understands where you're coming from, that is going to do all that they can to provide the services that you need to get healthy and stay healthy. We provide, in addition to just the many services, which are primary care, behavioral health, pediatric dental, pharmacies, we have a food prescription program. In addition to that, we're the largest WIC provider in Northern Nevada. And so whatever we can do to see you at that moment, we'll do that before we refer you out to other services, because we know that more often than not, our patients are, again, probably had to take a day off to come see us, right? Or they had to find ways on how they can cover their hours to see us. And so we want to make sure that we're respectful of that and can do all that we can at that moment.
Yeah. How many people do you serve? What's kind of the amount of people or locations? Mm-hmm. Like what's your footprint in the area?
You know, there's 8 FQHCs across the state of Nevada. We're the second largest. We're only in Washoe County. We're just over 28,000 patients that we're serving here in Washoe County. In addition to that, we have close to 300 employees and, you know, 45 providers, in which case we have MDs and nurse practitioners, APRNs. So we have professionals, and I think there's a stigma out there in the community that if you're going to go to a health center, then you're going to get less than because, quote unquote, it's for low-income people. We push back on that pretty hard because what you end up really getting from us is probably higher quality. Hmm. And I'd put that up against any so-called private organization out there that we are going to beat them or meet them in terms of what we're able to provide for our patients.
Yeah. Tell me more about that, about kind of the like stigma of quote unquote low income healthcare. Like how does that affect the work that you do and the way that you're able to reach people? And like, what does that look like?
Yeah. You know, it's a personal thing for me. I grew up here in Reno, right? In Sparks. Our health centers are right down the street from the streets that I grew up in. And so I only have to think about how would they have taken care of my family or myself if I walked in there, and what type of respect or what would we be hopeful for and seeing? And so it's really a conversation that I have directly from my board and myself to my leadership team, having those honest conversations with my team around me of saying, how are we going to meet that and making sure that patients don't know the difference when they walk into our health centers. They wouldn't know that it's for low income or commercial or anything. They just know that it's beautiful, it's nice, it's friendly, and we're going to make sure that you are healthy when you leave, right? And you have access to whether it's medications or referral to behavior health individual. One of the great things at a health center too is that we have integrated health, where really what that means is you're an MD and I'm a behavioral health, and you're seeing a patient and you're kind of going, I'm not a behavioral health professional, but Oscar is, and I'm going to go and knock on his door literally across the hallway and say, hey, can we work with this patient together and make sure that we get them where they need to be?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty amazing because you hear that even from our providers, which at many different times, everyone thinks that providers all work in a bubble. And if you're in the healthcare world, everyone must hang out together, right? Or they all must all grab coffee or grab a beer afterwards. And that's not necessarily true. Everyone's very isolated in many different ways. And so to be able to walk down the hallway or go in the break room and you're having a conversation with a dentist, with a pharmacist, with an MD or licensed clinical social worker or MFT, that really kind of revolutionizes the mindset of how do we take care of our patients and how do we have those conversations to really make sure that they're healthy.
Yeah. How does that communication work? Is that not a traditional thing in other types of medicine where you'll have kind of all of those services either you know, under one roof or kind of connected in a way where instead of it's like, oh, we're going to refer you out to someone completely removed. Can you just talk a little bit about the difference between what you're doing there and what people expect from or what they're used to, I guess, from medical providers?
Yeah, traditionally, I mean, that's exactly what it is, Connor, is you go and see your family, you know, your family doc, your PCP, and that's who's there, right? And when they put a shingle up, that's your doctor, and that's who you're going to go and see. And if they need to do a referral, they'll refer out to the insurance or someone else, and you'll get a call from a behavioral health professional or someone else saying, we're open here, or you make the call, and you're scheduled out, you know, 4 months out, right? Same thing for dentists. And some more often than not, if you're going to get medication, you got to drive out to your CVS or somewhere else to go get your medications. For us, for example, if you go to our Wells clinic, go and see Dr. Travis Walker, who's my chief medical officer. And he says, hey, you know, talk to me, what's going on? And if it's more of a, I'm not feeling great, you know, I need someone to talk to. Well, let me go grab someone really quick and let's see if we can set something up. And they'll sit in the room together. We'll all get to talk about maybe there's something going on here. Maybe I need to follow up a conversation with the LCSW or something else. And that's where the conversations go, right? To be able to catch that at the moment is an amazing opportunity to do that for our individuals that, again, have to go back to work. Mm-hmm. They have to go back to the reality once they open up that door and they're heading back in the streets, right? Got to take care of the loved ones. Got to go make that paycheck. Got to pay the bills. And so we'll try and do as much as we can while we have them. But the biggest part of a lot of that too, Connor, is just the amount of trust that's needed to make sure that you break through some of those stigmas, that you make sure that people understand that, again, it's quality. They don't know any difference and they're going to get that top tier care.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about the need for a primary care physician? I know that's something that a lot of people don't even really have a primary care doctor. People rely on urgent care a lot. If you get sick, you just go see whoever's at the urgent care. Yeah. Can you talk about the need for primary care doctors and how different medical models provide that or don't provide it?
Yeah. Five of our sites are already tagged as patient medical homes, right? And basically what that means is there's been a huge amount of data that's been generated from our services that are sent to the gov, and they come back and they stamp us as saying these are great facilities that provide that primary care home for our individuals. It really means that I have access to you as my primary care professional. I'm not getting passed around a lot, and it's important. Because you know my history, you know my family's history, and now we're able to talk about how to get me healthy or keep me to have, make sure that I stay healthy. In addition to that is just how we're caring for the individual. What we know at CHA and the patients that we take care of, we have a high number of folks that are diabetic or hypertension or obese or other types of chronic diseases that really impact, especially communities of color. It's saying, how do we care for those individuals, right? And so for us, it's just that preventative piece and just is really intertwined with making sure that you have a primary care doctor, because we got to get you started. Mm-hmm. And I think people usually wait until they're sick. That's why they go to the urgent care and that's why they go to the ER. And if we really want to be thoughtful and be preventative and think forward, you want to set up as soon as you have a chance, you get that insurance card, you get that Medicaid card that you go and see one and establish as soon as possible. Because nothing's better than making sure that you stay healthy, right?
Yeah.
You know, we all know that. The little slogan, health is wealth, but you know, it really comes down to it because there's so many families that also go broke because of those healthcare bills. And so a way to make sure that you stay on top of it and you stay responsible and accountable is set yourself up with a provider as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons why we strive to make sure that we have locations located all over Washoe County, not just in one hub. That's important for us and our board of directors is we want to make sure we break away from that barrier of transportation, and you should be able to go down within a certain radius and go and see your provider, right? And so we have locations all over town, and we have access available.
Yeah. Does that also contribute or avoid the stigma concept, right? Instead of it just being the one place where all of the low-income patients are going to, and it gets that the concept of like, oh, this is the low-income place. If you distribute more availability into different locations, does that help kind of like break that up to where you have, you know, different neighborhoods, so it doesn't feel like you're concentrating?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's in many different ways. It's also community pride, right? The folks know their communities better than anyone else, right? That's where they put all their time. That's where they love. And if they see a facility that provides quality care in their community, it also brings another level of pride of saying, you know, we have a community health alliance right down the street that's, they care about how they treat our patients. They care about the facilities. They care about how the customer service is, and that all interplays with that. We see that right now, for example, in Sun Valley. We had a clinic in Sun Valley that was a quarter of the size of the one that we just built about 2 years ago. And the community, those tired. Those are tired facility definitely played into the stigma of what your typical movie clinic would look like. And that was that at times I'd walk in and the plumbing would be off, right? The doors wouldn't close all the way. It was an amazing, yet a lot of big hearts in there from our providers, and our patients loved us, but we didn't have any more room to grow either. And so a promise that I had for my patients, for the patients there and for the staff, is that I was going to work my butt off to make sure that we found a better facility. And we did that. You know, thank you to the community, to the foundations, to our team, to our board of directors. We were able to raise close to $2 million. And now we have a beautiful facility in Sun Valley that is also a gem for the community out there. And it's, again, some of the hardest working people that we know, right, that are the bedrock and that keeps our economy going. And they should deserve that. You know, they deserve better. And so that was really awesome. If you ever have a chance to go visit our Sun Valley Clinic, you'll be blown away. Another one that we do in addition to in terms of partnerships is we have a tremendous gift from the city of Reno, where we didn't necessarily receive the gift, but the city of Reno has voted on putting $5 million of the ARPA funds towards the New Road Clinic. And the New Road Clinic at Miguel Rivera Park is a city facility. So we lease that property from the city. So CHA would not receive $1 from that. However, they're reinvesting into their own facility for an expansion, where we will be able to benefit from that in terms of providing more services for the families at New Road. And so just deeply honored and blessed that they saw that. They had the foresight to see that they would invest ARPA funds. Really, again, the crux of it is to support and to families that were in medical deserts and making sure that the people that are impacted the most receive services. And so through that funding, and again, CHA will help with some of that funding also in terms of the furniture and other things. It'll be a public-private partnership. Is we'll be able to serve thousands more annual road. We'll be able to build a pharmacy. We'll be able to build more exam rooms, Beaver health rooms, a food prescription program, a revamp kind of and make it more efficient in terms of the rehab of the existing building. And so just a lot of love to the city of Reno for having the vision to make sure that we saw that those communities are still in need and we're trying to meet it. And for them to kind of have the vision to say, let's build on that is pretty amazing.
Yeah. You mentioned people going broke for medical expenses. Mm-hmm. I think that you have kind of a sliding scale opportunity mm-hmm. that people aren't turned away for inability to pay mm-hmm. those kind of things. Can you talk a little bit about that element of the individual cost of healthcare? I know you see a lot of patients who are on Medicare, Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk broadly about the affordability of healthcare and how clinics like yours play into it?
Yeah. You know, for us, we receive a grant from the feds, but it covers about 10% of our overall budget. So some folks think that everything is, we're a charity, and that's not the case. We're reimbursed heavily by insurance companies, by Medicaid, Medicare, but a quarter of our population of our patients are on commercial. So your hometown health, Prominence, and those types. And then say about 10-12% is sliding scale fee, and that's the cash, right? Those are individuals that either don't want insurance, that deny their insurance, or small business owners that just don't want insurance. There's a mix of all kinds, right? And so, again, we'll look at your pay stubs. We'll decide whether it's slight A, B, or C, or if it's going to be at full cost. We have those conversations with them about what that cost is, but healthcare is definitely expensive. And it's extremely expensive, and it's something that we've got to fix as a nation because it shouldn't be that expensive. If we really all are able to get in a room and just lock the door and talk about, again, what's the mission here? Mm-hmm. What's our purpose? It's not about margins. It's about making sure people stay healthy. I think those conversations are well overdue and honestly make it happen. But the FQHCs have such a great model because we don't turn our backs on anyone. We will see where you're at. We're constantly fighting with the legislature on making sure that our reimbursement rates are raised to at least market. To mm-hmm. make sure that we're competitive, to make sure that we can recruit and retain professionals in our health centers. We have an amazing foundation that helps us offset some of those gaps when we can't quite make it. So yeah, in many different ways for us, it's as a nonprofit and to kind of throw that lens on as you've got to operate someone like a business, it's important for us to understand that we've got to be sustainable in the long term. You know, we're not good to anybody if we can't keep the lights on. And so it's a constant, you know, review from the board and from our leadership team to make sure that we're hitting and providing access along those lines. And so with that, it's you're constantly looking at the reimbursements from Medicaid, from Medicare, and what that's being able to take care of in terms of costs. And then you roll that into operations. And so it's a fight that I always have, right? Advocate for at the state ledge. Grateful to the feds too, because Medicaid is a partnership between the states and the feds in terms of our reimbursements and everything. But to keep up with costs and the what it takes to hire a professional, you know, we're talking people that are really expensive. You have your medical doctors, you have your dentists, you have your pharmacists, you have professionals that have their doctorate degrees and they're coming out making six figures, right? And if we want to keep that quality of care high, we've got to be able to retain quality, or else we'll lose them to the big dogs in the community, right? And so it's always constantly looking at our service lines, but ultimately at the end of the day, there's a line that's drawn, and that's usually by our board of directors and us, and saying, do we slim back on service lines or do we grow other service lines to make sure that those are in place for the overall community? And some of the things that we're looking at is in terms of new opportunities for CHA, in addition to just the services we provide now, is we're looking at the stepping into the MAT program, the medically assisted treatment, like opioid addiction and so forth. That's a new service line for us. So we're going to start slow and start to ramp up and hiring those professionals to make sure that they provide that really amazing service and efficiencies for our patients, to make sure that they receive the medications as soon as they need them, you know, as they're, and help them achieve their goals in life. And, but that comes with a lot of capital up front to hire individuals before they start seeing patients.
Right.
And so there's the costs, back to your earlier point, the costs of healthcare in general are just so astronomical, but we're in a place that, you know, is expensive and you're just trying to do the best you can. One thing that I've always, my lens as a leader, is knowing that we don't have to do everything. We have great nonprofits in our community that provide a tremendous, beautiful amounts of services for our community members. And so, you know, if you're a jack of all trades, then you're a master of none, right? And so working with my team is making sure, let's be masterful in terms of the services that we provide. And then let's refer out and support those nonprofits that just do an amazing job for our patients and make sure that they have access to them as soon as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more about that, because you talked about everything kind of being under one roof and having that access within your facilities. But there's, again, there's things outside of your facilities that your patients need too. Can you talk a little bit more about how you partner with those organizations and what that looks like for patients?
Yeah, we have over, I want to say 10 to 15 community health workers at CHA. And really their job is to sit down with a patient and make sure that they can refer them out to services that we don't provide, whether that's the Boys and Girls Club, whether that's the Children's Cabinet, or that's the Reno Housing Authority. All the different nonprofits that just that would help them achieve what they need to get financial stability is their work, and they do an amazing job doing that. But a simple one that I can tell you is we have the food prescription program, which is really a novel program that other healthcares and hospitals have come to kind of see how we do it. And it was really born out of our break room, where it was just a simple, you know, apartment, you know, kind of style refrigerator where our employees would put their lunches, right? But then someone had the bright idea of saying, can we give food to our patients? Because sometimes our patients would come in and they're hungry, whether it's a child or a family or a senior, right? And that slowly grew to us taking over someone's office and buying commercial refrigerators, right? And then other refrigerators. And through that partnership, we created a much stronger partnership with the Nevada Food Bank. The Nevada Food Bank, where they come and deliver twice a week. And through that, we're able to prescribe, our providers are able to prescribe healthy foods to those individuals that probably are not on the best diet with respect to their chronic disease. If you're a diabetic, you should probably stay away from certain foods, or hypertension, or, you know, like, how do we help someone achieve that healthy lifestyle when I can tell you eat better, right? And then you're going to go back into the community and then there's a food desert and you're probably going to go to the convenience store or go grab something off the dollar menu, right? So for us, it's important that we see ourselves as kind of help bridge that, but we're not going to be a food bank, right? That's not what we do. We're there to make a bridge happen and then hopefully lead you and give you the schedule, say, by the way, go to the food bank distribution sites. Here's an address. Here's those days that they're going to provide that service. The same for the Boys and Girls Club and such, right? They're looking for after school care for their kids or before school care. they may be running into issues with, related to language. Our community health workers are bilingual. They'll be able to talk and translate and help folks get on their feet and kind of understand how to bridge those needs that they have, because of course they're probably going to go to work. The parents are, and their kids are latchkey kids or something else, right? And you run into other issues. So it's constantly thinking about how do we work with other partners in the community to achieve the ultimate goal, and that's to make sure that people are secure and safe in their homes mm-hmm. and healthy.
Yeah. You mentioned you have a lot of bilingual staff. I know over 50% mm-hmm. of the people you serve are Latino. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about and you mentioned kind of like the racial differences yeah. in access to healthcare in general. Can you talk a little bit about the Latino community in Reno and sure. the role that CHA plays in serving that particular population?
Yeah. Of the over 28,000 folks, about 70% are Spanish speaking of our patients, and the same is reflected in our team and our staff. And really, you know, we serve everybody, of course, but I believe that we've found ourselves a trusted community partner with the Latino community because, and really what we've seen is growing is during, especially during COVID, where we've always had historically had it trusted because we're in those neighborhoods. First of all, we're on Neal Road. We're in Far West Sparks. We're in Sun Valley. And so some of these community wells historically for many years has also been, and now that community's changing. So historically we've been in those communities because we just look at demographics and Medicaid and look at the types of insurances. And we all know for the most part, early immigrants work those jobs that don't necessarily cover insurance or pay less than, or they're in those circumstances that they're trying to work out of, mm-hmm. right? But we also saw that we've had a very trusting, honest conversation and relationship with that community. And that's just word of mouth has grown. We didn't do a lot of necessarily marketing or branding out in the community. It was a lot of word of mouth, and people heard like, hey, they speak Spanish and they'll be able to help you out. And what I was going back to the COVID piece is we had the state, we had the feds, we had everyone reaching out to us saying, you have a trust relationship with that community. And we know that they are being impacted tremendously by COVID, and we need to get ahead of this. And so how do we get vaccines into arms? How do we give the message about making sure that people stay home if they're sick? How do we make sure we don't spread COVID out and get the economy back and going as soon as possible, right? And so that was really, it showed a lot in terms of how trusted we are with those patients, that direct community, and it's grown from that. Mm. And it was pretty amazing because during COVID, we have a small pharmacy team in relation to other large hospital systems. And we're the third largest COVID provider during COVID, right? We were out in the community. We volunteered. Not everyone volunteered. Mm. Oh, and we did. We were behind the health district in Renown, and then that was us. You know, small and mighty, and we did thousands upon thousands of vaccines, and we're out in under tents. And I was tremendously, tremendously proud of my team to be able to go out and volunteer and say we want to be part of the solution and to get our economy going back again and get our community safe again.
Yeah, that is the first place that I had exposure to learn about CHA was I went to a drive-up COVID shot clinic at CHA on Wells. It was in the the earliest days of the vaccines, and that was the place that you could go get one.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that kind of having the existing trusted relationship with the community helped you provide vaccinations and stuff for the people that you already worked with. Mm. Can you talk a little bit about kind of new patients or awareness coming into CHA through COVID? Am I not the only one who kind of learned about CHA because of COVID?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. A lot of folks just didn't know. And now that they do know and they saw the quality that we have, they interacted with our amazing team, is they've since then established with us. Our numbers have been just growing. I mean, that's where you see the growth on both the patients and our team. That's where you see also the diving into of new service lines that we want to provide for our community. In addition to the MAP program, another one that we hear directly from our community is more support for our new families, our growing families, right? Our pregnant moms, soon to be moms, and making sure that they are able to see and get the prenatal care ahead of time, and they're not delaying that process. Because what we've seen time and time again, and research shows, is our most expensive patients are the ones that are yet to be born. And what that really comes down to is if the mom doesn't have the prenatal care to make sure that the babies are born healthy, then now you have a long-lasting life issue with the little one that's going to need care from service from specialists and referrals from all over the place, all over the spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. And so some preventative care things is making sure that our community feels safe and they feel secure is making sure that we can try and do that at home while we got them in hand, right? And so that's something that we look at wanting to build up here over the next few months is building up that program. And so that's really, really exciting. Our chief medical officer, Dr. Walker, delivered a few thousands of babies in our community. So he has that's part of his thing is he really wants to get that program up and going. And so that's super exciting, especially for our board of directors and our patients to know that line is coming. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we'll lose those patients. They'll go have a baby and then we won't see the little ones because people get back to work, right? And so we want to make sure we're calling and following up and saying, come back, we need to do a checkup. We need to make sure you guys are off and going and look for any delayed kind of health issues as the little ones start to grow. Mm-hmm. Try and get ahead of it.
Yeah. You mentioned WIC too. Can you talk a little bit about what WIC is and how that works at CHA?
Mm-hmm. WIC is Women, Infant, Children. It's a program that's dragged it down to us from the state. It's an opportunity where we're able to check on people's eligibility really around income to see if young families, new families are able to qualify for discounted groceries at the grocery store to make sure that they're healthy groceries that they can purchase. In addition to that, it's checkups, well checkups early on. Our probably most busiest WIC program is in Sun Valley. It's the only clinic that right now currently that's open on Saturdays, and it's only open for WIC because it's such a high need. But what we have an opportunity is to see people at that moment and check their eligibility and make sure that they're eligible at that moment. And so they're able to walk away and able to go down to the grocery store and get those healthy foods and nutritious foods for their little ones right off the bat. And it's just checking early on, checking their weights and making sure that the little ones are growing healthy in our community. And so we also have a mobile unit related to WIC. And so you'll see us out there in partnership with the Ronald McDonald House, being great partners with us on that. And so you'll see us sometimes in parking lots throughout the county where we have our WIC staff in there that are seeing the parents and scheduling and so forth. So at all of our health centers, we'll have WIC offices there ready and able to see our patients.
Yeah. How much of a problem is it when people aren't aware of benefits that they are eligible for, right? There are programs, there are benefits, there are things that people could be taking advantage of that they might not know about. Can you talk a little bit about informing people about various services or programs that they might be eligible for and how CHA kind of contributes to that informational piece?
Yeah, a lot of us are community health workers are able to sit down with someone and say, hey, let's talk about where you're at right now, right? And then through that kind of early conversation, just like you can possibly qualify for this or that or that. Or it's like, you cannot qualify for that, you know? And they may come in with the idea like, I qualify for that. Like, oh, you don't actually. But there's other services that we may be to help you on, right? And so let's having a lot of those direct conversations. I'm old school. I like to sit down and with somebody directly. And so a lot of our patients too, they want to hear from you, right? Versus jumping online. Like it's all online, you know, go on the website. Well, we see a lot of people get frustrated with that, whether, and so or the information's outdated, you know, or other things. And so when they set up and have a schedule with our community health workers, we can sit down and talk to them about all the types of programs that they may potentially be available, walk them through the process, set them up with the health exchange to see if there's some type of insurance product that they qualify for, or if it's Medicaid. You know, help them with the Medicaid application. Our job is to make sure that we can at least guide them to see what programs are going to be available and they would benefit from. Because we also know that that's a stressor that can come off their shoulders, right? And the hopes is that they'd be able, if it's insurance-wise or it's vouchers, that cost savings can put more money back into their pockets. So hopefully allow that they may potentially go back towards their utilities or other things. These cost of living is going up, right? We know that, and gas or other things, and it's something they can take off their shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about Medicare and Medicaid? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of your patients are coming from those particular programs. Can you talk just about what those are and how they're different than private insurance and kind of their function in our healthcare system?
Yeah.
So just broadly.
Generally about two-thirds of our patients are either Medicaid and Medicare. It's a government program, of course, that's supported by both the feds and the states. And what it does is it allows for people, especially our kids, it gives them a wide breadth of coverage, especially preventative coverage and primary coverage. Through that, the way it works, without getting too into the complexity of things, is if we have four different MCOs in our state, and CHA has to work with those MCOs, if our patient comes to us, and they're insured by one of those insurance companies. We get paid by them, and then that gets triggered to the state, and they give us a RAP payment to cover the cost that the insurance companies put in. Kind of going down a rabbit hole here, but it provides a wide breadth. Let me step back and just say it provides a wide breadth of services for our patients to allow for them to have both preventative and a specialty care. Some people would even challenge and say the Medicaid coverage is better than their commercial coverage. And it leads me into the bigger, wider conversation that, you know, we need to definitely look at a one-payer system, because it's just so crazy in terms of the amounts of complexities that it is to provide. Again, the simplest piece is to provide somebody care. But it's the state of Nevada has done a really good job with their Medicaid program. The issue there is just because it's such a large system, is getting up to market rate or market reimbursables for us to take care of our operational costs. That's probably the bigger challenge. But their overall coverage is they do an amazing job. They do a pretty good job.
Yeah. I want to come back to the local, but let's do a quick detour to national healthcare policy real quick. Yeah. It hasn't been in the news as much in the last few years, I think, because the ACA took a lot of the pressure off for the demand for single payer. Again, we don't have a perfect system right now. I think the ACA helped a lot of people. But can you talk about national healthcare policy? You've been, you know, working in healthcare in recent years while there's been a lot of this conversation. Yeah. It's also kind of, you know, settled down a little bit where there's not as much of it's not a forefront issue, I don't think, right now. Can you just talk a little bit about what you've seen from national healthcare policy and how it's affected the work you're doing at CHA? And again, you mentioned single payer.
Yeah.
You'd like to see that. Can you just talk just briefly about what we're doing with healthcare in this country?
Yeah. You know, it's, again, I think, again, through the Obama administration, again, the ACA enacted has really taken a lot of pressures off, and people have seen the benefits of that. You know, when things were kind of all over the place, that's when you really saw people going broke, right? To this day, I mean, if you're going into the ER and you're getting specialty care and certain insurances aren't covered, then you're just, it's super tough. But yeah, I mean, with that, I'm trying to watch my words here. It's not necessarily an issue because of ACA. I kind of look at that because a lot of people are covered. They have an option to be covered. It's people now can either defer to not have insurance, right? If they don't want it, that's really on them. That's a gamble on them, and until they see the bill, right? But having the health exchange and being able to see which programs may fit your budget or that family is as an option is definitely, I think, helped as well. You know, and giving props to Cortez Masto and Rosen here at the state, and also Amade with respect to his support for FQs. And what he supported CHA is the more that FQs can do work in a national setting and here locally to provide care not only in the urban settings, but also in the rural, I think have definitely helped. FQs were a lot smaller then. And now this past year at the state legislature, the FQs was whispered all throughout the hallways, right? As a way to help kind of bridge that issue with access to quality care. And so I look at national, and then I really dive into the FQ national piece. And I think that FQHCs have a huge opportunity to be that bridge in terms of providing a preventative primary care support. And if we really build on that, we'll definitely make a larger impact. And it's nonpartisan. That's a beautiful thing, Connor, is people on both sides love FQHCs because they're just there to provide care to folks and make sure that's accessible, and they do so much work in the rurals and the urban settings and that's where you see private organizations not being able to profit or really kind of pencil it out for themselves.
Do you think that part of the reason it is so nonpartisan is because it's the point of care, right? It's hard to be mad at the actual services that are being provided. Easy to argue about politics, but harder to be like mad at someone who's providing medical care.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of in many different ways, right? As much as it's a business, but a lot of it is heavily reliant on Medicaid and Medicare, right? And that's a government program for us to get paid through, right? But we can't get paid. It's not just a open blank check. It's per patient. You know, if little Oscar came to CHA, we'd get reimbursed by that. But if he didn't, we wouldn't, right? And so it's per patient that comes in the door that we're able to at least bill for those services. And so when you have an FQHC and then various programs that they offer, I can see how beneficial it is to our, you know, rural parts of Nevada, where it's kind of helps cover the gap for somebody to set up a health center in you know, in Winnemucca or something, or Elko or Pahrump or something, where for a private provider to do, it might be a little bit harder, right? And so you get one of the, also the big, I'd say also benefits of being an FQ is you get higher Medicaid reimbursement rates than you do from the private side. And that was done purposely because more often than not, the patient that you see is probably more complex. They probably haven't seen a doctor as often as someone that has had insurance for year after year, right? And so the idea there, and they were really smart back then, is to say, you know, those providers should probably get a little bit more because they're probably going to spend more time with that individual. Hmm. They're not going to cycle them out in 15 minutes. You're probably going to spend 20 to 30 minutes with that individual, right? So that cuts into how many people you get to see a day and bill for and so forth. And so you get a little bit higher reimbursement rates to try and cover those and offset some of those costs.
Okay.
And so that's where those benefits come from. But if those reimbursement rates don't stay to par with market, then that it becomes an issue there.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned seniors briefly. Can you talk a little about the healthcare gaps for seniors? I know that we have an aging population and seniors have kind of unique medical needs as well. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about medical care for seniors and where CHA fits into that?
Yeah, our Medicare and our seniors are, it's a growing demographic at CHA, and it's awesome because it's so lovely when you go to into our lobbies and you see their face and how grateful they are to know that we provide the amount of services we do at one place. You know, our seniors, for the most part, don't necessarily like driving in the snow. They don't like driving at night. They have a really strong routine that they follow, and it's been pretty cool to kind of see that, you know, they're you know, on money. If we open up if we're running 5-10 minutes late, you know, and they see me in the lobby, they'll let me know. I'm like, hey, you know, you guys running late? This is fun conversation, but it's a growing, one of the things that we provide is we also have clinical pharmacists, and that's been a really hot commodity with our Medicare population, our seniors, is they'll sit down with some of our seniors, which sometimes have 8, you know, 10 different medications that they're taking. And some of those medications, they probably shouldn't be taking anymore, but they're just so caught up in the routine of how things are structured, or they saw a specialist at the time that, and they don't want to come off it because they're afraid. And I get it. You know, those are really big decisions to make. So sit down with their clinical pharmacist and make sure that they are taking what they need to be taking. And more often than not, you get like 50% of those medications taken right off the table. And it eases up a lot for them to feel secure and saying like, oh, okay, I don't have to take those anymore. In addition to that, it helps their caregivers. You know, they'll come in sometimes with their parents or someone else and say, so my mom or my dad doesn't have to take this anymore? Like, nope. And in addition to that, we'll schedule and make sure that they have a primary care here, and we'll take care of them. We have a pharmacy here, and also we do free delivery. Pharmacy delivery. And that was really born during COVID, where we saw many of our seniors or folks that just aren't able to drive running into issues. And again, our goal is to make sure that they stay healthy. And so we were able to purchase some little RAVs, and so you'll see your little RAVs out there dropping off and delivering pharmacy medications all over Washoe. And so, and that's a growing kind of service that we just like to provide for our patients.
Mm-hmm. And you also provide, I know, services at our place. And yeah. I wonder about kind of healthcare for people who are, you know, not just experience poverty, but the unhoused community. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of conversation generally in our area about homelessness and healthcare for people who are unhoused. Yeah. I'm sure is a particularly challenging thing because, you know, they might not have a reliable place to even be to have a foundation to seek healthcare. So can you talk a little bit about both the, you know, the opportunities for people who are experiencing houselessness to get healthcare, and then how do you partner with other services or nonprofits that deal particularly with unhoused folks?
Yeah, you know, we've been going there for a few years now, and it's a great partnership that we have with Washoe County. And so thank you to Washoe County. We've been able to increase our services at our place, and our place again is a program for our unhoused women and children that are in really tough circumstances. And so we go there once a week, all day. We have a doctor on our medical provider on one of our medical mobile units that will pull up. It's a beautiful mobile unit. And so you can't even tell the difference. You go inside and it's a clinic on wheels, right? And we'll be able to see the little ones and the parents to make sure that they're healthy, right? They probably had some really bad trauma and circumstances as to why they're there. We want to make sure that they are early on that we set up a visit with them, working with Rise and working with the other providers there at our place to make sure we get them on schedule. And it's just doing general checkups, making sure that the kids are up to par on like the vaccines that they need if they're going to start school soon. And checking in with the women and the families to make sure that they are feeling healthy in terms of where they're at in life at the moment. And once they leave our place, we'll set them up at one of our other health centers that's probably more convenient for them. And so that conversation early on, an early conversation with them about saying, hey, we're here for you, right? And it's something that's been awesome in terms of how we can play just a small part in helping unburden them with some of the issues that they're taking in. We have a growing issue in our community, and there's a lot of folks, and it's a complicated, and there's a lot of folks that are sitting at the table trying to resolve that. And I think our team really enjoys and the fan working with the families and working with Washoe County and Rise and those others at our place and providing the services we can there.
Mm-hmm. We've barely talked about you, Oscar. We've just been talking about CHA this entire time. Tell me about how you came to work at CHA. Have you had what was your background with healthcare and kind of what drew you to this as a profession?
Yeah, I kind of fell into it. You know, after grad school, I came back home and I kind of fell into working and just looking for a job. But I was always around families. All my whole experience growing up has been really, 90% of it has always been in support of or advocating for families and communities. From way back in the days, from working at the Boys and Girls Club to Jan Evans, the welfare department, just different ways in how I can interact and kind of be there. So when I moved back home from grad school, I found a job working at Access to Healthcare. And so that was kind of my first kind of hooray into healthcare. And I got to tell you, as a kid growing up, and probably I can speak for many folks that come in or in my shoes, is healthcare is a scary place to kind of think that that's a career you can go into. Because when you think about healthcare, you typically just think about folks in white coats, right? You're thinking about biology and med school and all these different things. So it must be very complicated. And it is, but there's so many different ways in terms of how healthcare interacts with the general community. And working at Access to Healthcare and seeing all the lingo and just kind of understanding the systems associated with that, started kind of geek out, right? And I was like, okay, this is interesting. And it is complicated, but it's not as complicated as I thought. And so from there, simultaneously, I started running for the city council. And so, and I've always worked while I was on council. And so from Access to Healthcare, I went and worked with KPS3, and they ended up picking up the ACA contract. Working with that team in terms of going out and really doing community organizing and setting up meetings with the community so they better understood what the ACA is and what it's set about and how to be informed and how to enroll and the importance of getting insurance. That was another piece for me to really kind of understand it from that insurance aspect. Also, from there, I rolled over to work for Renown, and I was their manager of community benefit. We're again working with nonprofits from kind of that administrative role and how the hospitals interact with local nonprofits and supporting them to make sure that their outcomes and their measures are appropriate as they should, or kind of help make Washoe more healthier. And then from there, I rolled over to Community Health Alliance. And, you know, thank you to Chuck Duarte. He was the CEO at the time, gave me an opportunity to go in and really work hand to hand with him in terms of how CHA could grow and really be more embedded in the community. And that's kind of how I kind of got my start. But I've always carried that lens of more of the macro piece of saying, how can we make sure that healthcare doesn't just stay within the four walls of a clinic? How do we make sure we see ourselves within the community that we're serving? How are we including ourselves as part of these social determinants of health, right? And that's really the crux of keeping people healthy. It's not always just the seeing people within the four walls. And so as being on the council at the macro level is, how do we engage of saying that we need to start to look at things through a healthcare lens and look at policy through a healthcare lens and see that government, whether it's local, the county or state, is that they could really make a huge impact on the health of an individual, of a family, of a community.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about your work on the city council, and you were with the Washoe County Health District. Can you talk about what made you decide to go into like that piece of public service and how it interacted with your, you know, work in healthcare?
So, it's like, you know, as a, again, growing up as a kid here, And I go down a whole, started with the bus stop story from way back in the day where I decided to run for office. But the crux of it and kind of like really just is.
What's the bus stop story for people out there?
Bus stop story is, so at Sparks High, I was a kid, you know, I grew up on Greenbrae, right there, Greenbrae and Sullivan. And I just remember coming home one day and there's four brothers. I got three brothers. There's four of us. And we didn't have quite a large driveway. And we all had cars by that time, you know, little beat up cars. And I just remember pulling up to the front of the house. And there was a bus stop right in front of my mom, right in front of the house. And I remember going inside and just kind of zod, right? I was like, what's that? My mom was inside washing dishes. I just remember, I was like, it was yesterday. And I was like, hey, mommy, ¿qué es eso? You know, like, what's that? What's over there? And she was like, I don't know, mijo, no más llegaron, tocaron la puerta y dijeron que no te podías, you know, parcar ahí en frente de la casa. Like, you can't, they just put it there and they just said you can't park in front of the house anymore. And I was like, what? That doesn't sound right. And I was like, so what do we do? And they're like, you got to park in front of the neighbor's houses and other places, right? And so, and we just never wanted to draw attention to our family or anything else in the neighborhood. But, and so it just became awkward and weird because you'd have to park in front of neighbor's houses and stuff. And they'd kind of look at you like, you know, like, what's that? What are you doing? This is kind of our, it was just weird. So it was like Tetris up and down Greenbrae, right? And then my mom, she's, you know, she works banquets. And so she still works, she works at the GSR. She's been there since I was the MGM. And so she worked different hours, right? Sometimes early morning, sometimes late. And so we'd wait. So one thing that we made sure as brothers, like no one parks in the driveway except for mom, right? And so we got to just figure it all out. And that parking in the front of the house really was two parking spots, right? And so we're just kind of going all over the place. It became really frustrating for me and my brothers. And then just started to really sit heavy on us, kind of going like, that's not fair that they could just do that and not even tell us or be considerate enough about that. And I just remember going to school and just kind of pissed at the world and going like, yeah, of course. Of course they treat us like that, right? Because, well, you know, we're not an affluent or influential family, you know, we're just dogados that are just living, right? And I just remember my oldest brother just going like, hey, we got to do something. I'm like, what are you talking about? He was like, well, I'm going to wait for mom and dad to go to bed. And my dad was working construction as a laborer. He retired as a labor construction and he was tired. He'd go to bed early and we just kind of huddled up like a little football team. He's like, all right, I'm going to do this. Or what are you going to do? Because like, I'm going to pull it to the front of the house. He's like, I've been kicking the sign all day, so it's kind of loose. So I'm going to pull up. Oscar, Eddie, you're going to pull the sign out, throw in the back of the truck. I got the car going. And my little brother, he's like, you're going to be lookout, you know? And they're like, kind of waited. It was probably like 11 o'clock at night. It was quiet. The streets are quiet. And then boom, we go out there, go quiet, start shaking, grab it. And then you have four kids jump into a small little pickup, a little Datsun pickup, and you got this bus stop sign hanging out the back, right? And we're just driving down the street, and I was like, we knew it was wrong, right? We knew it was wrong. We found a little open lot, and we tossed the sign, and we're all scared, and we're all trembling, like, oh, man, we're going to get busted. We're going to get so much in trouble. My brother, you know, he does what we all hope that he would do without us saying is, we go home, and he parks right in front of the house. Right. And so for us, that was just like, yeah, you know, we did something. Right. And I just remember going to school the next day and just super excited, super stoked and going like, we solved the problem. Right. Back to normal. Right. And I mean, we have our house back and that felt good. And then it was just short lived because about a week later, I went home to park and there was a sign again, but this time it was in concrete. And it was like a big old, I want to say it was like a camera on it. I mean, it was just kind of scary. It was like a sticker, but I was like, oh shoot, there's no way you're gonna even go close to that sign. People are watching, right? But it was just deflating too, because you're like, wow, we just did this and now it's right back to where we were. Like, we have zero say about anything. I remember going back to school and my teacher, Mrs. Farias, an amazing teacher at Sparks High, she was like, Oscar, what's wrong? And I was like, you know, it's just typical, right? I have no say about anything. And she's like, you know, what you should do is call a council member. I was like, council member, what is that? And who is that? And she was like, there's a council member that represents you in the area. Just call him up. And I was like, there's no way. Like, what am I going to say? And just tell him your problem. I was councilman mayor at the time. I just remember going home, opened up the phone book, looking through, found City Hall, called, left him a message, probably a heated message, and just figured that that was that. At least I kind of could check the box and say, go back to school and say, I called and I left a message. You know, what else can you do? Didn't expect a call back, and he called me back. John Mayer called me back. He invited me to his office. We got to talk. My mom went and bought me a nice shirt and sweater, you know, make sure it was, you know, ready to go. And I went in there super nervous, and we got to talking. And he was like, hey, I can't promise you that I'm going to move the sign, but I'll look into it and we'll get back to you. And then, you know, 1 month passed, 2 months passed, so they, well, nothing, right? 3 months goes around and we come home and the sign's gone. And they moved it. And guess where they moved it, Connor?
Where'd they move it?
Right in front of my neighbor's house, yep. Right? But, yeah, you know, but it wasn't my medium. It was like two houses down, but really, the reason why he did that, and he called me, he was like, hey, Oscar, I hope you saw that the sign was moved, and hopefully that helps your family life and everything else. And I was like, thank you. It's amazing. He's like, I feel bad, though, because you guys moved it just right up the street. He's like, oh, no, we did that on purpose. And I was like, oh, really? Why is that? And he's like, they wanted it there because they ride the bus every day. He's like, and so now moving forward, RTC, what we do no matter what now is we'll reach out to individuals and make them sure that if this is going to impact their lives, right now there's community outreach associated with this. So that small little impact that I saw is if people are able to advocate or at least bring a discussion, a real discussion about sometimes these small things that aren't nothing, but there are a lot to people and they make impacts, is when I started to see how impactful you can be on a local level to make immediate change. And that's what really started to draw me into local politics and wanting to see immediate change. And so that's what I'm super proud of with those last 10 years is the changes we've been able to bring to Northeast Reno, Neo Road, Wells, Donner Springs, working with the individuals and making sure you could advocate for them. And also trying to mentor folks to say that it's not just a me thing, you know, it's a us thing. And if we're not at the table, then we're on the menu. And you guys need to be at the table. You deserve to be at the table. And it's just advocating for the issues you care about. And that rolls directly into healthcare for me. For if we don't have streetlights up in Northeast Greenland, people are not going to go out and feel safe to go exercise. If we don't have access to parks, good quality parks, people aren't going to go out and want to join and be on a soccer team. If the equipment is shoddy and everything, then kids are not going to want to go out and play, right? And physical inactivity is one of the highest reasons for obesity and diabetes and other things. If we're not advocating for mixed use opportunities and land use developments into our core, then what types of services are you going to get, right? What types of restaurants are you going to get? If you're not constantly seeing that policy is organic and ever changing according to what we have now, then you're locking yourself into situations that are going to really be hard to change the dynamics of the demographics that are moving in. And so for me, it's like that's all interplays with social determinants of health. I think the city has done a wonderful job really kind of evolving with that idea. Mayor Sheehy's done an awesome job really highlighting mental health as a huge issue. Devin's done a really good job making sure that parks and other things stay active and are getting the love that they should. And so a lot of these folks are just trying to keep that to the forefront, which is great. And other folks have other agendas, and that's fine too. And that's why it's important to continuously have other people that are kind of, hopefully you're just as engaged and want to be engaged, right? I just remember this is kind of this old kind of within the community and within a lot of communities is the idea of crabs in a bucket, you know, people mm-hmm. are always trying to pull each other down. And I've always saw it as an opportunity. It's like, we got to flip that around and find a way how you pull people up, right? And know that we're never always going to be 100, you know, but I guarantee you we're able to sit in a room and have honest conversation about what's really, what drives you and what, why are we doing what we're doing? 90% of the stuff we'll be able to take care of and get there, right? And mm-hmm. then we just got to keep pushing. But I think we have a good council. We have a good county commission and Sparks. I mean, everything's, there's a lot of opinions, right? From all sides and every side. And I think it's healthy to one respect. It's unhealthy to the other. But I think if people are really honest with each other and sit down and talk about it in a room in a professional manner, then we'll be able to make Reno like what it is. And that's just an amazing place to live for our community, right?
What did we miss? What else do you want people to know about CHA or you? Or I feel like we covered a lot. What do you want people to take away from the conversation?
You know, that we're here for the community. If anything related to healthcare for a family or a loved one, please consider follow us on social media. Go to our website. You'll see where we're at throughout the community. We're here first and foremost to make sure that people stay healthy and get healthy. and that we're a partner and making sure that Reno stays as vibrant and as healthy and as exciting as we all know that it can be.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Oscar. It's really good to have you and learn more about what you're doing with CHA, talk a little bit about some of your city council stuff.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. Again, one of the things I say basically every episode is the thing I try to do with this show is help people understand who people are and what they're doing. Because I think that in any community, there's a sense of, oh, I know this person's name, right? I've seen this person's picture. He does a healthcare thing, whatever that means. So being able to find that balance between getting too in the weeds about super, you know, technical stuff that people maybe don't know or care about.
Yeah.
But kind of like shining a little bit of light on on who you are, Oscar, and what CHA is. So thanks for coming on the show to kind of, you know, spell some of it out for us. Yeah,
no, I appreciate you, all the work you're doing and getting some people here to spend some time and really hear who they are versus maybe a quick little trend or a sentence or two on social media.
Yeah.
It makes a difference. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bonus time, just for the patrons. So you're no longer on the city council. This is not a highly political show, but it is an election year. We're about to be having a lot of conversations about politics, both locally and nationally. So a couple questions about the political world. You were on city council for 10 years. So to start, can you just tell me about why did you leave city council, right? So you were working in a capacity where you were able to, you know, get the bus stops fixed, those kind of things. But obviously it's hard to do that job plus your job at CHA. Plus you said you were on the, you know, the health district. Can you talk a little bit about balancing those things and choosing what to do, right? Like, how do you make those decisions?
You know, it was one of those life-work balance things, right? Community Health Alliance is just growing, especially during COVID. Already, we knew the importance that we were in the community, right, as an organization. But during COVID, it was just tenfold in terms of we were making sure that people still were getting sick, just normally just getting sick, needed to be seen, figuring out the complexities, how we do that in a safe way, in a safe manner. And for me, it was the more you dive into it, the more you're saying we're a bigger piece in the puzzle than maybe I saw that we were in the past. And so I really wanted to make sure that we lived up to that. I had long conversations with my board and saying, we're growing so fast in the right way that I want to make sure I'm there for my team more than maybe I was in this past year. So I had to be honest with myself. And so it was one thing or the other, right? And I had a really deep reflection on just the amount of time that I did at the city council. And there's nothing that I regret not doing. It was just the time in my life where I said, I can't do it all. Again, you know, Community Health Alliance, we were almost 300 staff members, tens of thousands of patients in the middle of a pandemic. And I have twins too, and trying to juggle it all. You just have to be honest with yourself and say, that was doable for about a year or two. Now we're in a whole different time, in a whole different environment, world changing dynamics, and you got to kind of forecast the future. And so for me, healthcare is, I'm very passionate about. I'm very passionate about making sure that there's equity and making sure that people have access to great care and all hands on deck, right? And at the same time, when I'm a dad, when I have my kids, I'm dad full mode, right? And they are everything to me. And so when I have my twins, I want to give them all the time that I can. And I look back at the projects and the people that I worked with and at the city as a council member, and I loved every minute of it. But also know that there's other good people in our community that can carry that on. And you got to believe that other good people have that intention and that want. And so I've purposely just tried to stay out of a lot of the political stuff. I don't want to be that individual that it's hard for them to give it up, you know, or to give their two cents on every little thing. Like that's, you know, you have to give people the opportunity to create their own future and figure things out. And they're just...
Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Renoites, and special thanks to my guest, Oscar Delgado. As I said, that was just a little peek of the bonus segment for this week's episode. There is much more available for patrons. This week's bonus episode, I think, is 15 or 20 minutes, something like that. We talked a lot more about what's going on with City Council and Oscar's time on the City Council. Again, that is available for patrons at all levels, even $3 a month. That's about $1 an episode. It helps make the show financially sustainable. And I hope that the patrons who are supporting the show, thank you so much, are enjoying these bonus segments from our guests this season. Next week on the podcast, I'm excited to welcome Joy Hoyer, who is the executive director of Girls on the Run Sierras.
March is Women's History Month. We just recently celebrated International Women's Day, and it was great to learn about what Girls on the Run does to help girls develop self-esteem, confidence, communication skills, and how Girls on the Run provides those things as an after-school program that is based sort of around running, but not just a running club. Really interesting stuff. It was great to learn about the organization and what they do. Please check that one out. That is, again, next Tuesday. We have new episodes every Tuesday, a few left this season. I'm really looking forward to our upcoming guests, and thank you so much for listening. That's all I've got for you this time. Have a good one.